Our culture has a very difficult time, differentiating joy and happiness. And I was thinking all day kind of how to share, the difference. I mean, happiness, it's an emotion, right? This will be interactive tonight. Okay, all right. So happiness is, it's an emotion that, if happiness is a bumper sticker, then joy is the car, right? No? Okay. I thought of that all day long. And I imagined that I'd share that and everybody'd be like, wow. That guy's brilliant. So forget that. Let me tell you the difference between joy and happiness. So in 84, 85, Lindsay Scarborough probably knows this. And if you do know the exact date, you're very cool in my book. But there was a groundbreaking video that you could watch on a very young new channel called... Okay, was it called that yet? I wasn't sure. And it was my favorite video ever, although maybe the weirdest song. And so... I had this place that was just like, I don't know, a mile down the road, and it was just nobody was around, and there was this hill. And so I had a camera, remember the cameras we had in the 80s? They were like this big. And I set it up, and I stood up on the hill, and I had on this long trench coat, and I just started singing, shout, shout. Let it all out. You remember how the guys over articulated in the video? Shout, shout. And so when I would go back and watch it many times, it made me happy, right? I might have even said joyful until somebody at my college got a hold of that tape, 8 or 9 years later, and we're in a room full of people, hundreds of thousands, maybe a couple hundred, and then that video played. And as it started, my back was to the screen, and I thought, wow, that's a very poor rendition of Tears for Fears, shout. And I looked, and honestly, he was one of the most handsome people I'd seen on screen, but I realized that it was me. And whatever happiness that video brought me hundreds of times in the past, did not that night. As people laughed at my expense, and that's... Every once in a while, even years later, I'd see somebody and they'd be like, shout, shout. So if you'll turn your attention to the screen, no, I'm kidding. I burned that tape. But we do things like that in our lives, and, they might bring us some amount of happiness, and we might even mistake that for some kind of lasting joy, but it's not. It's not at all. The psalmist writes, and I was thinking about, because, when we do our Advent, it's kind of freestyle. Kind of pick whatever verse we want, and, that talks about the subject, which is... No, it's your turn. Joy. And so I always kind of automatically go to the birth narrative, right? Behold, I bring you good tidings of great, which will be for all the people. But all day long, I kept thinking about Psalm 43. And maybe it's because I'm a moody preacher. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I think, that this struggle to understand the difference between joy and happiness is so all-encompassing that we really miss it, that we're on a search for joy, but we settle for happiness over and over again. I think it was the theologian Cher who said, women get all excited about nothing, and then they marry him. That's funny right there, isn't it? And some of you, it's not funny at all. You're living it, right? The psalmist writes this, Psalm 43. And this will sound odd at first. Vindicate me, O God, and plead my cause against an ungodly nation. Rescue me from deceitful and wicked men. How many of you feel like it's deceitful and wicked men who rob you of your joy? One. Two. Thank you. Anyone else? I mean, how many of you, sir, are constantly, you know, that's kind of how we feel. We feel like the world is against us, don't we? I mean, we kind of get in that mode. You feel like the world is against you, that everybody's down on you, and you just can't have joy, and it's everybody else's fault. But you see, that's the crazy thing about joy, is that it can't be taken away from you. However, while having joy, you can settle for happiness. And happiness is fleeting. It's for a moment. Has anybody ever gone back to a high school reunion? And you were all nervous about going back because there was that one guy or that one girl that maybe could have been. And there's two experiences you may have had with that. One is extreme happiness when you see that person. And thank God that that did not happen, right? And other times you look and you, you know, maybe you're like me and I pass by a mirror before I get there and I'm like, oh my gosh. Happiness is fleeting. It's for a moment. And I don't want you to think for a minute that I'm preaching against happiness. I mean, you know, how dumb would that be? Happiness is fine, but it is an emotion. And if you're holding on to happiness, you're going to realize you're holding on to air because there is nothing there. But it's joy that is constant. And the psalmist is writing. He's saying, you know, it's almost like the psalmist. And here's what I love about the psalmist, right? When you read through the Psalms, you hear all the things that you think sometimes, but think that you shouldn't say. I have people tell me that all the time. You know, Pastor Jamie, I've been questioning God, and I know I shouldn't. And I always say, why? Why shouldn't you question God? You know he's huge, right? You know you don't hurt his feelings when you have questions for him. Even if that question is, Lord, do you know what's going on? And he just answers, yes. Don't you kind of love that? Somebody sent me a real snotty email the other day. It was real snotty, so send me a sweet one. And they were just asking, was there a specific reason why I did something that I did? And you could tell the way in which the email was written. I don't know how, but can't you tell? Don't you get the nuance? I mean, you can tell when it's intended to be a zinger. It's intended to make you stop and to make you think about who you are and what you've done. And so I start, man, I'm like giving all these. Then I just go back, go all the way to the beginning. And I just say, no. And that was my reply. And I'm sure it just burnt the person up. Was there some reason why you did what you did? No. Anything else? Vindicate me, O God, and plead my cause against an ungodly nation. Rescue me from deceitful and wicked men. You are God, my stronghold. Why have you rejected me? Have you ever felt that way? And I'm just asking. I know the answer. But I want everybody to see, have you ever asked God why he's rejected you? Why he's left you? Raise your hand if you've ever done that. All right. And people always tell me, I know I shouldn't say that. Why shouldn't you say that? Are you thinking it? Response. Yes. Does God know your thoughts?
Yes.
Yes. It's not like it comes out of your mouth and God says, how dare you, lightning bolt. He already knows our thoughts, but I'm going to tell you, I'd rather you be saying to God, why have you rejected me? Where are you? Why? I'd rather you be saying that because at least you're talking to the source, to the only one who can do anything about the plight that you find yourself in. He's the one. And the psalmist says, "You are God, my stronghold. Why have you rejected me? Why must I go about mourning, oppressed by the enemy?" And then he says, it's like, you know, he starts to realize, and he says this, because like I'm guilty of all of this up to this point. Like I can throw a major pity party. But then the psalmist writes, "Send forth your light and your truth. Let them guide me." Because when I feel rejected and I wonder where God's at and why he's not there, what am I believing? Somebody say it. What am I believing if I believe God has left me and he's rejected me? I am believing a lie. And the psalmist writes, "Let your light and your truth guide me. Let your light guide me. Reveal to me the error of my thinking, because I feel like you've left me. So reveal your light to show me, Lord, that you haven't left. But also reveal to me your truth. That you, not only have you not left me," and I say this, listen, if you're a follower of Jesus, embrace this, because the light reminds you that he hasn't left, and the truth reminds you that he never will. That he will always be there. I have so wanted for this message to be profound tonight. And probably, ashamedly, I wanted it to be profound in a way where you all would think that I'm a profound man. Right? You're thinking that right now. What's your name? I'll sign your shirt later. But honestly, this truth is so simple tonight, and yet we refuse to take hold of it. That he is there. He is there. He hasn't left, nor will he. He will be there, whatever you go through. Here's my problem. It's not him I'm depending on to be there, right? Because I have, instead of grasping the joy that is constant in my life, I've settled for happiness. I want the feeling to be there. I want it to remain. That's what I want. You remember when you first started dating somebody? How you felt? So it's a question. The married people aren't sure what to say. You know, I really don't remember. Remember what that was like. You know what we call a married couple holding hands walking down the street, don't you? Newlyweds. Now, here's the thing. You remember those feelings, and they are intoxicating, aren't they? I mean, there's nothing like it. I mean, do you remember? How old were you when you had your first boyfriend or girlfriend? I was 28. Before I caught one, right? But you remember those feelings and how they're there. And listen, those feelings, they are addictive. Because at some point, you've got to be willing. Now, come on, I'm getting real tonight. At some point in that relationship, especially if it leads to marriage, at some point you just realize, okay, that feeling comes and goes. Sometimes it's there. Sometimes it's not. I love it when married couples come to my office and say, you know, we just don't feel like we love each other anymore. And I just say, what's that got to do with it? And they look at me like, well, because what do you mean? That's such a weird question for a pastor to ask. Is it doesn't matter. I don't care how you feel about each other, right? Sometimes I feel like I love my wife. Sometimes I feel like I don't. But let me tell you about love. It's not a feeling, it's a choice. Right? I tell people, you can't fall out of, nobody falls in love. We fall into a lot of other things, don't we? You know what I'm talking about? I mean, we fall into lust, don't we? We see somebody, you're walking, you're like, hello. We don't fall in love. Love's a choice. Right? And the Bible says that God demonstrated his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Because love is a choice. It's not a feeling. Happiness is a feeling. And so the psalmist, and this is really the message, that we would learn to pray, Send forth your light and your truth and let them guide me. Let your light and your truth guide me. Because if your feelings guide you, your life is going to be nothing but an ebb and a flow. It's going to be in and out. I mean, we see it on Sundays. You know, we got people that come to this church about once every 6 weeks. Because about every sixth weekend, they lose all brain function, all control, and they have the weekend to end all weekends. And immediately, they feel what? What? Guilty. They feel bad. And so they come to church to trade that feeling for another feeling. And we sing the songs and we lift our hands and we get this good feeling and we leave. And let me tell you, you don't need God for that to happen. Because it's feelings. Let your light and your truth guide me. That our one pursuit is Him and Him alone. Now I say that, and some of the struggles we have in here. I mean, the struggle of a new marriage is to feel like you need your spouse, right? Just be married a few more years. You won't feel that way much longer, right? And the struggle for a married couple who has children is to think that it's all about the kids. And pretty soon you don't have a marriage. You're just raising kids together. And if you're single, it's that pursuit that I got to meet that person. I got to find that person. The clock is ticking. I'm 21. Will it ever happen? Right? I've had people tell me that. Let your light and your truth guide me. You see, this word is written to prepare us to live not 2,000 years ago, but in this day and time. That He's got to be my pursuit. And like I said, I want this to be deep and profound, but I'm telling you, it's a simple message. That He's got to be more important than every other thing in my life. That is who He is. That is what He is worthy of. Let me tell you, if He's more important than your marriage will be better. If your marriage is more important than Him, call me and make an appointment quick. He has to be more important than anything. Let your light and your truth guide me. He says this, let them bring me to your holy mountain. I just think that's unbelievable. Let them bring me to your holy mountain. A place to be refreshed, a place to be restored, a place to be reminded. How do we get to that place? It just told us that we let His light and His truth guide us. That's how you get to that place. How many of you want to get to that place? Listen, how many of you have ever been to that place? I've been to that place. I want to stay in that place. I want to camp in that place, right? But then I compromise joy for happiness. And I just begin to pursue all the other things that I'm pursuing. I mean, the psalmist, this Psalm 43 is powerful. I think it's so powerful. I think you ought to put in every room in your house some kind of reminder to let His light and His truth guide you. Let Him speak to you who you are. Let Him speak to you what He desires for you. Don't listen to everybody else. Don't listen to what they say. And you know who the most damning voice is in my life? Is my own voice. And I just hear those things that things will never change. They'll always be the same. How many of you hear that? Just me? Man, we hear that. And the psalmist says, but let your light and your truth guide me. Not what I think, not what anybody else thinks. It's what you think, Lord. There was a theory we learned in college in psychology class called the looking glass self theory. I can't remember now whose theory it was, but the theory is that whoever the most important person in your life is, whatever they think of you is what you will think of yourself. Whoever the most important person in your life is, what they think of you is what you will think of yourself. Now, I don't buy into all the psychological theories, but I've seen that one tried and true 1,000 times. You know, I've seen a kid who the most important person in his life is this father he barely knows, who wasn't ever around, a father who abandoned him, a father maybe who just spoke horrific things to that kid. And I'm going to tell you, if that kid's a boy, chances are, no matter how horrible that father is, that kid will grow up and that man will be the most important man in his life. And that boy will always struggle with who he is because he heard what his father said about him. We deal with that all the time here, meeting with people in our offices. They struggle with that. Now, I think that what that really is much less a psychological theory, but a biblical truth. And one that we should learn to live by if we understand that Jesus is supposed to be the most important thing, person in our life. That our pursuit for Him rises far above all other pursuits. And if we see Him as that, then what we begin to think about ourselves changes, because we no longer see ourselves through somebody else's eyes or even through our own eyes, but we see ourselves through the eyes of Jesus, who has spoken time and again through His word that He loves you and that He has a plan for your life. And that whatever, wherever you've been, whatever you've done, how many of you have been some places and done some things? Anyone? Y'all just don't want to be interactive, or are you ashamed? Or is it just profound and you can't even hardly move? Don't laugh. I've been to those places. I've done those things that scar deep inside of my mind. And when I get to those vulnerable places, the enemy whispers, "You shouldn't be here. God doesn't have good things for you. You don't deserve them." And that's half of a biblical truth, isn't it? I don't deserve them. Every good and perfect gift is from God, and whatever He gives me, it's out of grace and kindness because I don't deserve them. But the fact remains, the truth is, He's a Father who gives good gifts to His children. And it's not because they're worthy of them, not because they're a great son or a great daughter. It's because He is a perfect, loving Father. And so every trial I face, I want to try to face it through the lens of that this trial, this crisis is a gift from God, because this one is so tough. This one is so difficult. I'll never get through it on my own. I'll only get through it clinging to Him. Let Your light and Your truth guide me. Let them bring me to Your holy mountain, to the place where You dwell. Then will I go to the altar of God, to God, my joy and my delight. Joy isn't a feeling. Joy isn't an emotion. What differentiates joy from happiness is that joy is a person. Joy is Jesus. He's my joy. And that's why I can tell you that that joy is constant. And what I mean by that joy is always there. Just because the dark clouds come doesn't mean that joy dissipates, because joy is Jesus and He never leaves. He's always there. And whatever I go through, whatever I have to go through, I never go through it alone. I go through it with Him. I've been married for 16 years, and you know, and my wife would tell you that there's been trials that she's gone through in our 16 years of marriage that she had to go through without me because I wasn't emotionally there for her. Guess what my wife found out about marriage? You don't need it to get through a crisis or through a trial. What you need is Jesus, and He gets you through. And whatever I was supposed to be in that moment that I refused to be, Jesus was all those things to her. Not in a way for Jesus to communicate to her, so He hasn't been there for you, just leave. Not in that kind of a way at all. Jesus is saying, you keep doing what you're doing, you keep being what you're being, I'll do a work in His heart. Oh, yes, I will. Right? And Jesus just reminds my wife through those times when I'm checked out that He is all she needs. And so my wife, if you caught her on the right day, would tell you that she doesn't need me, but she wants me in her life. On the right day, okay? And I would tell you, I don't need her. I got four kids. I love my kids. You've heard me talk about my kids. I wouldn't trade them for anything, but I'm going to tell you what, I don't need them. I love being a pastor here at this church, but I don't need this job. All I need is Jesus. And my problem is my valleys are typically intricately linked to the things that I think I need. And the psalmist writes, send forth your light and your truth. Let them guide me. Let them bring me to your holy mountain, to the place where you dwell. Then will I go to the altar of God, my joy and my delight. And I will praise you with the harp, O God, my God. You are my joy. You are my joy is a person. I mean, I might allow a little latitude to say joy is an experience as long as it's an experience with Jesus, right? With joy Himself. And it's an inner joy. Listen. Joy is an interaction. It's a communication with the living God, with Jesus, who's already said what He thinks about you. And what He desires for you. And the plans that He has for your life. I'm meeting with this kid, and honestly, he's probably like one of the most brilliant 12-year-olds I've ever met in my life. For real, straight up. And we've just been meeting, and it's kind of random. It's kind of like whatever he wants to talk about, that's what we talk about, right? And so we were meeting, and I'm telling you, the kid's 12 years old. He blows me away. He's so much smarter than me. I keep my phone down here. And when he asks questions, I'm like, yeah, let me pray about that. So I have the answer, right? He's like, is that your phone, Pastor Jamie? I'm like, no. And he just looks at me and he says, Pastor Jamie, are you afraid to die? Nobody's ever asked me that, right? I'm expecting a 12-year-old to ask me questions I'm somewhat practiced up on, right? So that I have a good answer. Then I just looked at him, and he just asked it, like, just in, you know, he's like, are you afraid to die? And I said, well, I'm, I said, I guess I have two fears related to death. And his eyes perk up. What? Because he thought I'm a pastor. I'm saying, I'm not afraid to die. I'm ready to go to heaven right now. Take me, Lord. That is not my gut response. It's my thought out preacher response. My gut, you know, and I just said, well, I said, I guess one, you know, maybe there would be a little fear about, you know, how I would die. He said, and he got the most confused look, like it was the stupidest thing he'd ever heard in his life, right? And I'm trying to get used to that look as my kids are getting older. And he goes, what do you mean by that? I said, you know, like, and I said this, He's probably never coming back. But I said, you know, like, I don't want to be eaten by a shark. And I'm like, and he's like, what are the odds of that happening in Kentucky? I was like, well, I do have a pool. He's like, okay, what about the other one? I said, I guess, you know, there's probably a little fear there about if I were to go now, I want to see my kids grow up. I want to see them get married, have little Jamie's running around. How would that bless the world? And golly, I don't make fun of you to your face. And I said, I have a little bit of fear related to that. And I said, but you know what the truth is? They don't need me. They don't need me. Do you know that God promised to be everything those kids need? He promised to be that. And even in the places I fall, I've already told you, I fall short as a husband. Let me tell you, I fall way short as a father. And God meets every one of those kids' needs in spite of their father. And you know what? He did the same thing for me. He does the same thing for you. He is all that we need. And in no way am I challenging you tonight to emotionally disconnect from your wife and children or your spouse or whoever. That's not the point. You're missing the point. The point is to love Jesus more than you love anything else. And that's how you get to the holy mountain. That's how you get to that place that you love him more than anything. And you know what about my wife and my kids? They're a blessing because God allows them to be a blessing. God uses them to bring some amount of fulfillment in those things in my life. But ultimately, if they all leave me tonight, he's all that I need, and I'll make it and I'll be okay, right? Because of him. And the psalmist is saying, I've pursued all these things, and in the pursuit of all those things, it just seems like everybody's down on me. And the Lord's response through the psalmist is, then just depend on me. Count on me. I've never left you, and I never will. And that we would learn tonight to pray, when we hit those weak and those vulnerable moments, that we would pray, Lord, let your light and your truth guide me. And that we would listen to the voice of truth. We would listen to what he has to say, and we would read in his word what he has to say. Because happiness is an emotion, but joy is constant. It's for a lifetime. Joy is Jesus. Father, we come to you tonight. I pray for those here tonight that don't know you, that could just really say that joy is not in their life. Because the only way that joy isn't in our life is because you haven't come into our lives and saved us and forgiven us of our sin. And I pray that you would save people tonight. I pray that, Lord. Lord, I pray for every one of us who have compromised that joy for happiness, Lord, that you would lead us with your light and your truth. Lord, I pray for every marriage struggling, because there wasn't a word spoken that was against marriage, but it was a word spoken to encourage us that whatever we go through, we can go through it. That you're bigger than whatever problems our marriages face, our kids face. Lord, I pray tonight for the prodigals. Lord, that you would bring them home. That you would do that. And Father, with sickness and those things we're facing in our lives, Lord, that you are our joy. You are our hope. And we put it all into you, Father. So we love you, Jesus. And I pray that joy is our interaction, our communication with you. Joy is our relationship with you, because you and you alone are joy. May we love you more than all other things. It's in the name of Jesus we pray. Let's stand together. This altar is open. I want to invite you to come. Maybe your prayer is, you know what? I've been pursuing some things, but it hasn't been Jesus. And we lay tonight, we lay those pursuits down at this altar and say, Lord, I pursue you. You're my joy. You're my hope. Lord, you tell me who I am. Lord, you tell me what you have for me. And that our complete trust is in him. If you don't have a relationship with Jesus, please talk to one of us tonight. Let us talk to you about that. You'll never have joy without Jesus. This altar is open. You come.